Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
The Thunder beat the Jazz 98-89 last night. Big win for OKC. It knocked the Jazz down to the eighth spot in the West. But that's not why I'm starting there. That's not why this is getting the headlines. Because the real story of the Thunder v. Jazz was Russell Westbrook v. Utah Jazz fans. And the clip that went viral last night. If you have not seen that clip or heard that clip, here you are.
I'm going to say one thing. I promise you, we are playing. I swear to God. You and your wife.
All right, so that's Russell Westbrook. I don't have time to read the entire transcript to you, but it does include lines like, and I quote, this is Russell Westbrook, quote, I promise you, you think I'm playing? I swear to God, I'll bleep you up. You and your wife, I'll bleep you up. And then quote, I promise you, on everything I love, I promise you, I swear to God, end quote. Now that's something that you do not see or hear every day. A future Hall of Famer telling a fan that you will bleep him up. That's something. Telling a fan that, quote, you and your wife will bleep you up. I mean, that's incredible. It's incredible, but not exactly new. Not for Russ and not for the Jazz fans. They got into it last year. Also, you'll recall during the playoffs. And Russ shared his thoughts about that then as well.
With these fans, man, it's truly disrespectful. Talk about your families, your kids, and it's just disrespect to the game, man. I think it's something that needs to be brought up. And I'm tired of just going out and playing and letting fans say what the hell they want to say. I'm not with that, because if I was on the street, they wouldn't just come up to me and say anything crazy, because I don't play that shit. So I just think it's disrespectful when they get the chance to do whatever they want to do. It needs to be put to a stop, especially here in Utah.
All right, so that was last year. The fact that something like that happened last night in Utah, not exactly a shock, not given what's happened in the past. Russ v. the state of Utah is one of the longest-running feuds in the association. So when Westbrook went off last night, you know, quickly, the old narrative returned. The script could practically write itself. Classic Westbrook, old Russ, running hot again, couldn't take the pressure of playing in Salt Lake City, lost his head again. The fan, Shane Kiesel, was interviewed after the game. He shared his side of the story, and it sure sounded like that old narrative had come back.
He's got to be a professional. I mean, she was sitting down the entire time. Me and him were just, we were kind of having fun, to be honest.
At least you thought you were having fun?
Yeah, he was smiling at one point, and there was a lot of people, because it was when, you know, Joe would come by and poked Paul George in the eye, and then Joe goes over and apologizes immediately. Russ is just F-bombing and carrying on, acting a fool down here, and everybody's getting on him. And he had, I guess, heat. I thought it was ice. I just told him, I'm like, just sit down and ice your knees, bro. And he turned to me and he's like, that's heat, that's heat. And I'm like, well, you're going to need it. And then it turned into not safe for work.
So that's what provoked his response. There was no swear words.
Said a swear word to him. And everybody in the vicinity will say it. And she never left her seat, never said a word, hands in her lap. Never said a single swear word to him. Not one. So, like I said, initially I was like, oh, I'm talking with Westbrook, you know? I mean, the guy's one of the greats, but he's also classless. I don't care. He can threaten me all he wants. I was the one talking to him, but don't threaten a woman. She's 5 feet tall and 110 pounds, man. I mean, never said a word to him. Her first NBA game ever. Welcome to the NBA, Jen.
So, you say he was having fun. It didn't seem like he did it. Then again, his idea of fun might not be the same as yours or mine. In any event, this fan says that he told Russ, ice your knees. Westbrook, it's according to the fan, Russbrook said, it's heat, it's not ice. Kiesel said then, you're going to need it. And then it was on. And then Russ just started to F-bomb Kiesel and his wife and threaten them. At least that's the fan story. Russ, what is your version of the story?
How it started was a young man and his wife in the stands told me to get down on my knees like he used to. And for me, that's just completely disrespectful to me. I think it's racial. I think it's just inappropriate in a sense of there's no protection for the players. I think there are a lot of great fans in, around the world that like to come to the game and enjoy the game. And there are people that come to the game and to say mean, disrespectful thing about me, my family. For many years, man, I've done all the right things. I've never done anything to hurt or harm anybody. I've never been in any trouble. Never fought a fan. Been in the league 11 years. Clean slate. Humble. I take all the criticism from everybody. I've been doing the same thing for years. And for me, disrespect will not be taken from me. I'm completely just sit back some time and just take it like that's just one video, but throughout the whole game, throughout the whole, since I've been here, especially here in Utah, every time I come here, it's a lot of disrespectful things I said. And if I had to do it over again, I would say the same exact thing because I truly will stand up for myself, for my family, for my kids, for my wife, for my mom, for my dad every single time. I expect anybody else to do the same. As for beating up his wife, I've never put my hand on a woman. I never will. Never been in any domestic violence before, never have before. But once he said the comment, his wife repeated it, the same thing to me as well. So that's kind of how that started. I know you guys only got the tail end of the video.
Two totally different stories, right? He said, she said. Two totally different stories. According to Westbrook, the fan was not telling him to use heat or ice on his knees. Instead, the fan said, quote, to get down on my knees like you used to, end quote. And that his wife repeated it. Listen, I don't know what was said or what was not said. We don't have video of the entire interaction. We only have video of Westbrook's reaction. But looking at these two stories, I have to say, what Westbrook says makes more sense. The reaction video that we have makes a lot more sense if he's reacting to a guy and his wife making a racist remark like that than if he was just talking about heating his knee. That sure did not look like somebody reacting to a difference in opinion on the rehab and care for joints at this point in the season. I mean, look, Westbrook is a different guy. We all know this. He can be prickly at times. We know that. But do you really think that this is a guy who would start F-bombing a fan and his wife over an argument of whether or not to ice or heat his knees? Like, we've gone over the list of reasons to go in the past. Treatment of the knee is not a reason on that list. Westbrook has played 900 NBA games in his career, including the playoffs. Let's say that roughly half those games are on the road. So he's played roughly 450 road games. That means he's heard a lot of bleep talked about by a lot of fans. But he's going to start F-bombing and threatening a guy and his wife because that guy suggested that he apply heat to his knees? I mean, that's hard to imagine, right? But then again, maybe it's not totally he said, she said. Because OKC's Patrick Patterson tweeted, quote, fans can say bleep about a man's family, wife, and kids. Tell a player, quote, get down on your knees like you used to. As men, what do you expect us to do? Shut up and dribble? No one is held accountable for their actions except for us. Fans are protected in every way possible, but not us, end quote. And when asked by somebody on Twitter if that's what was said to Russ, Patterson responded, quote, yes, and more. Then another teammate, Raymond Felton, had this to say to the media after the game.
That was absurd what they said to us. And that's not fair. That's not right. This ain't the first game that's happened. It happened in Portland. It happened pretty much in every arena we go to. They're always picking on Russ. And it's just not right, man. It's not fair to tell a man to get on his knees. That's what you're used to doing. And then turn around, his wife reiterates it and says it right back to him again. It's not right. You know, then everybody want to make a big deal of what he said, but let's talk about what they said to him first. He's not coming off and talking to the fans, just saying stuff to them, just blurting out words. He's not. You know, they're coming at him first. When is it going to be a point when it's going to be protecting us players? The security was standing right there. He never said one thing. He didn't say one word. He looked at the people and turned around. Nothing was said. And that's not right. So as soon as Russ goes off, now all of a sudden all the security want to come, everybody want to come and say something. You know, now they want to post it and put it all on the internet and stuff to make him out of a bad person. Like, listen, man, I know him personally. He's like a brother. He's not that type of guy.
All right, so there's more also. You've got two teammates saying essentially what Westbrook said. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. While other brokerages will charge you up to $10 for every single trade, Robinhood does not charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all your profits. And there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections, such as 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is also giving listeners of the Jim Rohn podcast a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build that portfolio. Simply sign up at jimrohn.robinhood.com. That's jimrohn.robinhood.com. And then there's the alleged tweets from the fan. Again, I don't know if these tweets are from the fan or not because he does not have a blue check. But I know there was one tweet from last year that, according to Sports Illustrated, read, and I quote, "Westbrook is a piece of classless bleep. Somebody needs to kick his ass." And what do you know? That tweet has been deleted, along with the entire account. An account that allegedly had other worse tweets. I mean, that's kind of weird, right? If it wasn't Kiesel's Twitter account, it's strange that it appeared to have his picture on it and tweets going back a ways that were not exactly flattering. And now it's been deleted. And if it really was him doing that tweeting, it's kind of weird that a guy who tweeted, quote, "Westbrook is a piece of classless bleep. Somebody needs to kick his ass," would really just be talking to Russ about the care of his knees. I mean, it's possible, I guess. Here's the thing. We have a video of what Westbrook said in response to the fan. We don't have a video of what the fan said. The fan was the one who pushed out that video of what was said. But we don't have a video of what he said. We have what the fan claims he said, and then we have two teammates of Westbrook's claiming that that's not the case at all. And then Felton added that the fan's wife was an active part of it, not the quiet person that her husband described. Again, I don't know what was said. I don't know what was not said by that fan. But you got a pair of witnesses who are backing Russ on this. There's an alleged tweet. And then there's the reality of the situation. I mean, look, it's possible, I guess, that Russ completely lost his mind on the sideline at some fan who was telling him how to take care of his knees. I mean, maybe. I doubt that, though. If you buy a ticket to a game, you can jaw with the players a little bit. We know this. Some players will jaw back. We know that. But there is a line. And if you don't already know where that line is, maybe you should not be at the games. And here's a hint. Racist garbage is not on the line. Racist garbage, if that's what that was, is over the line. If that's what that was, it's so far over the line that if you were standing on the line, you wouldn't even be able to see it. And if that fan and his wife are spewing that kind of bile and hate, then I completely understand why Westbrook would react the way that he did. Again, I don't know. I wasn't there. It seems like a really over-the-top reaction for somebody who was hit with, "Hey man, you better heat your knee, you better ice your knee, you better take care of your knees." You know, where do you come out? Whose side do you come out on? 1-800-636-8686. More on that in a few moments, but we'll take a short time out. When we come back, I'm going to change up. Murray, we're talking college basketball right now. We're joined by the head coach at Murray State in his fourth season as the Racers head coach. NABC District 19 Coach of the Year last season led Murray State to back-to-back Ohio Valley Conference titles. Murray State beat Belmont Saturday to clinch an NCAA tournament bid. Matt McMahon is my guest. Matt, nice to have you back. How are you?
Hey, Jim. Great to be back with you again this season.
Good to have you back this season, Matt. So you've had a few days for it to sink in. How does it feel to be OVC champs and head back to the tournament for the second year in a row?
It doesn't get much better. It was an amazing weekend for us. Our fans travel in big numbers here at Murray State. We put over 10,500 people in the Ford Center there in Evansville on Saturday night. And just so happy for our players. They've been awesome all season long. And happy they're going to get to experience March Madness here next week.
So, Matt, last week, you go back to Saturday, you were trailing Belmont 31-26 at halftime. Then in the second half, John Morant started doing John Morant types of things. 22 of his 26 points in the second half, including a run of 8 straight. Obviously, you've gotten tremendous games from him during your time together. But what did you make of how he took over in the second half of that game?
Well, he was phenomenal. What really helped us was our big man, Darnell Coward, who's 6'8", 280 pounds. He got 2 fouls in the first minute of the first half. So ended up being a blessing in disguise because he got to rest all half. And then when we got him back on the floor in the second half, gave us great balance and really opened up the floor and gave Ja a lot more room to operate off the dribble. And, you know, he just showed his greatness and found a way to lead us back to the NCAA tournament.
We're talking to Matt McMahon. You know, when I spoke with Ja a few weeks back, we talked about his growth as a player and the recruiting process. What do you remember about how you heard about him for the first time? And then what was your reaction the first time you saw him play?
Well, we've told the story a lot this year, and deservedly so. One of our assistants, James Kane, who's now with Coach Prohm at Iowa State, was following our top recruit on the wing, Tevin Brown, who's our starting two guard now. And they were at an event in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and James was following Tevin, just happened to wander into a back gym and saw Ja for the first time. Called me that night and said, this kid's going to be a pro. I got up there the next day, my first time watching him. You know, you see, I mean, you've seen him, Jim, all the athleticism and explosiveness and the ridiculous passes and all that. But what really stood out to me was just the joy with which he plays. He loves to play. He's a relentless competitor. And he's just, you know, he's going to be one of the most exciting players to watch for many years to come.
Matt McMahon joining us, Murray State head coach. You know, what's amazing to me, Matt, over the course of the season, everywhere that you've gone, it's been a show because of Morant. I mean, we're talking about situations where instead of playing in front of several hundred, you're playing in front of several thousand because of him. So what's that been like for you, the program, and for him?
Well, it's been awesome here at home. We averaged in league play around 7 or 8,000 fans. We broke our arena record, had over 9,000 here to watch us beat Austin Peay on the last night of the regular season to clinch the championship. So that's been special here at home, but on the road has been amazing. Going to gyms where they average around 1,000 and they sell it out at 6 or 7,000 with fans in there with signs for Ja and lines wrapped around the arena to get his autograph and take pictures. It's really become quite the phenomenon as he's taken off this season.
We're talking to Matt McMahon. You know, Matt, given how special he is, it'd be pretty easy for people to overlook you or consider this a one-man team, but that's not the case. As an example, Shaq Buchanan played some excellent defense in that title game, holding Dylan Windler to 1 for 7 from beyond the arc. What did you make of how he showed up?
Oh, Shaq Buchanan's the toughest player I've ever coached. He's a warrior, the ultimate winner. He's 53-10 in his 2 years here. He was named the defensive player of the year and first team all league, all rightfully so. He backed it up this weekend. Dylan Windler's one of the best players in the country, Jim, any level. Had 32 points, 21 rebounds in the semifinal game. He'll be another guy you see in the NBA for a lot of years. But Shaq really did an unbelievable job defending him. He's 6'3", he's a monster athlete, 6'11 wingspan. And really just a great, great player. And I think you said it best. I mean, Ja gets all this attention, and he deserves it. But we got a really good basketball team. Ja has 311 assists this year, which is, I believe is the 10th most in the history of college basketball. And none of those assists are to himself, though he's tried a couple times, but didn't work out. But there are other really good players like Shaq and Tevin Brown, Darnell Coward, and I can go on down the line. We've got a really good and balanced team.
Yeah, and an unselfish team, and a team that's mentally tough. There were 15 lead changes, Matt, in that game, and you ultimately closed it out with an 11-0 run. It kind of reminds me of how you closed out last year's title game against Belmont, too. Now, you haven't lost since the end of January, so how does it feel to you right now? For instance, where are you right now as a team, and does it feel like you're playing your best basketball when you need it most?
I think we are, Jim. We took similar paths. Last year we had to win 13 in a row to get to this position to finish the season. This year it was 11 in a row. This year was a little different, though. We made some adjustments after we lost our second league game. We were sitting at 16-4. We changed our lineup. We changed our rotation. Made some defensive changes. It took us a few games to get used to. But we really, as a staff, felt it was necessary for us to be able to beat the best three teams in our league, which, you know, outside of us were Belmont, Jacksonville State, and Austin Peay. The top four teams in our league were dominant this year, really good. Our semifinals and finals of our tournament were really, you know, as good as any conference tournament you're going to see all week long. So I feel like we're playing our best. The one thing you enjoy this week, all the celebration and hoopla that comes with going back to the NCAA tournament, but it is a long layoff, so we've got to try and find that right balance of staying sharp, but also keeping our guys fresh and ready to go next week.
No, then finally, Matt, the kind of success that you're having in the four seasons at Murray State is nothing new. When you and I talked at this time last year, we talked about the great Murray State teams in the past, and it's not just the school, it's not just the program. The coaches who came before included Mick Cronin, Billy Kennedy, Steve Prohm. That's an amazing list of coaches. You were an assistant under Prohm, but that could still be intimidating for some coaches. What's it been like for you to carry on and improve upon what they started?
Well, I think we talked about it last year. We always believe comparison is the thief of joy. It's so true. If I tried to compare myself to those guys, I would have quit a long time ago, because there have been, you know, just elite coach after elite coach come through here. Fortunately for us, I think it's all about the players here. It's all about the amazing tradition, the history of championships. There's an unbelievable relationship here between the fans and the players. That's why we're able to recruit players like Ja Morant, Cameron Payne, Isaiah Cannon, all the way back, Popeye Jones, Marcus Brown. I can go down the line. So it's just, for me, it's just a blessing to get to be a part of it, play a small role in impacting these guys and getting back to the NCAA tournament.
And Murray State is headed back. Back-to-back Ohio Valley Conference Championships, the win over Belmont on Saturday, and that wraps up an NCAA tournament bid. Their head coach, Matt McMahon, my guest. Matt, great to get caught up. Appreciate the conversation. Look forward to seeing how it goes going forward. Nice to talk to you as always.
All right, Jim. Thanks so much for having me on. Go Racers.
When it gets cold out there, your vehicle needs some extra attention. O'Reilly Auto Parts has everything you need to keep your vehicle toasty warm. From choosing the right antifreeze for your engine to replacing your windshield wiper blades, O'Reilly will help your car. O'Reilly will help get your car or truck in fighting shape for the cold weather ahead. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Anyway, NFL free agency gets underway tomorrow. But the legal tampering period started yesterday. So, what is legal tampering? It's essentially the official opening bell on securing the bag season. And there were a ton of bags that were secured yesterday. Here is a quick summary of the guys who have agreed to deals that will be official as of tomorrow. Za'Darius Smith, Adrian Amos going to the Packers, Nick Foles going to the Jags, Landon Collins getting big money from Washington, T. Sizzle going to the Cardinals, Terrell Suggs, Sheldon Richardson going to the Browns, Anthony Barr and C.J. Mosley going to the Jets. Or maybe Barr is not going to the Jets, and maybe he'll stay with the Vikings. Frank Gore going to the Bills. Tyrann Mathieu going to Kansas City. DeSean Jackson being dealt back to Philly. Trey Flowers and Danny Amendola going to the Lions. Trent Brown, LaMarcus Joyner going to the Raiders. And those are just some of the highlights. Those are some huge names getting huge paydays. Like I said, bags are being secured in a big way over the last 24 hours. And it's pretty cool, right? Pretty exciting. By the time I finish going through that list, I'm guessing another three guys agreed to deals with another three teams. Every time you turn around, somebody's getting paid by somebody. But here's the dirty little secret. A lot of it's not going to mean a lot. A lot of it is not going to mean a lot. You're going to get a bunch of good headlines. Fans will get pumped up. And you'll have phrases like changing the culture thrown around. And you'll win a ton of pressers. But how many football games are going to be won? Because the start of free agency is frequently about bad teams agreeing to bad contracts for good players. Like, the value play has never been about making a big splash right now. There are no discounts to be had in the first 24 hours. You know whose name you did not hear me mention on that list? The Patriots. Yes, there are former Patriots that are signing with teams. Again, Oakland splashed out on Brown. And we can get into that deal, too. The fact that they're paying a guy who only a year ago was not well thought of at all. And all of a sudden, now he's getting huge money. So Oakland splashes out on Brown, and the Lions seem like they're pretty determined to build the Patriots of Detroit. But how often has that worked out? How many former Patriots have signed in free agency with somebody else and then gone on to star on that new team? You see, that's not how the Pats work. Instead of making a huge splash, they quietly make a deal for Michael Bennett.
Bennett.
Who probably is going to make about a billion plays for them at a fraction of the cost. Without the splash. That's how they do it. They let other guys pay their guys and splash out. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't dislike all the moves. It doesn't mean that I hate all the moves, because I don't. As an example, I love Tyrann Mathieu in Kansas City. Hell, I love Mathieu anywhere, because all this guy does is make an immediate impact and make defense better and make plays, lots of plays. And that's a defense that needs to be made better. And I love the reaction tweet from Patrick Mahomes. I love Frank Gore going to Buffalo because I love Frank Gore. I love Frank Gore being in the league. He doesn't just make a team better, he makes the league better. And I do like Nick Foles going to Jacksonville. But like a lot of other people, I'll follow suit and say this. I don't know why they paid him as much money as they did. 4 years, 88 mil, 50 guaranteed. It could balloon to 102 mil over 4 years. So what I see here is a good player and a great agent. And that's a situation where they were negotiating with themselves. And don't get me wrong, I want every guy to get as much money as they possibly can. So I'm not mad at Foles for getting that deal. In fact, he's got a great team around him to get him that kind of deal. And he's worked his ass off. And he's turned his career around in a Hollywood kind of way. He's earned it. He's earned it. You're worth whatever anybody will give you. I'm just not sure why Jacksonville thought they had to give him that much. I mean, once Denver traded for Joe Flacco and Washington added Case Keenum, who was left to pay that kind of money to Nick Foles? Only Jacksonville. And who would overpay for a quarterback in a situation where they're negotiating with themselves? Who would do that? Only Jacksonville. That was a one-horse race, and they just lapped themselves. That was a match race with only one horse. And the justification, and this is rich. The justification, according to Mike Garofalo of the NFL Network, is that they wanted to pay him that kind of money so that when Foles walked into the locker room, guys would respect him as a starter. The hell is that? Man, that makes no sense on so many different levels. The team that had Blake Bortles, the team that let Blake Bortles walk into that locker room, was concerned that Nick Foles would walk in and not get respect, so they overpaid him. First off, Foles was paid backup money in Philly, and his teammates there loved him. They loved him so much that there was a report that they liked him more than they liked Carson Wentz, the alleged next big thing. And it had nothing to do with salary. He was paid backup money. It had everything to do with who he is and what he does. And then if that's the case, what's that say about what has happened to Jacksonville's locker room? What's it say about that locker room that the front office feels like it has to overpay a quarterback just to get guys to respect that quarterback? A quarterback who won a Super Bowl? A quarterback who's played really big on the big stage? I mean, that says way more about the roster that you've assembled than the guy you just signed. That feels like an old Jacksonville move. That does not feel like a Saxonville move. So I find that really curious. Also, while I like Washington adding Landon Collins, it is so Washington to throw huge money at a safety and still have all the questions they have at quarterback. And if the Lions are trying to build the New England Patriots of Detroit, Washington seems hell-bent on being the Alabama Crimson Tide of Washington. The only thing that could make them more Alabama is if Jay Gruden had a soda bottle prop up at his press conference and then complain to the media about making up all these quarterback controversies. We are joined right now by Grant Williams. Grant, really nice to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
Good, good, Grant. So a few hours back, the news broke that you had been named the AP SEC Player of the Year. Given the year you've had, that's not exactly a shock, but what was your reaction when you heard that good news?
Man, I was excited. I was happy to be able to say that I've received the award again, and it's something that I will cherish the rest of my life, and I'm honored, and I wouldn't be able to have it without my teammates and my coaching staff and university.
Now, Grant, I know you're looking ahead, and I think a lot of people know you and watch you and see your game, but I think it's really important to understand where you came from if you're going to appreciate where you are right now. You're having a career at Tennessee that ranks up there with some of the all-time great players in that program, one honor after another. But as you look back on where you were as a player at high school, at Providence Day School in Charlotte, what kind of thoughts do you have?
It's kind of funny to think about how much I've improved and how much I have to go, because I know I have a lot that I can work on. And it's exciting to think of in the future to be able to say that there's more I can do and that I'm not done yet.
Grant Williams joining us. Now, your improvement has been so dramatic. The story goes that you were there and you were overlooked, and there was a good chance that because you were such a good student, you might end up playing ball at an Ivy League school. But there's some details that I want you to confirm with me, because watching you right now, these are things that I really can't believe. As an example, is it true that Davidson head coach Bob McKillop, who's one of the most respected guys in the game, told you that you did not work hard enough to play at the level? And if that's true, Grant, how'd that make you feel? What did you think?
Yes, it's true. He told me that straight up my sophomore year of high school, and it's actually helped me throughout my career, because it allowed me to better my work ethic and understand that if the stuff that I was doing wasn't going to get me to the place where I want to be. So he's been very impactful in my life, I'd say.
All right, so what you did was you turned that thing on its head. I think a lot of people, really in any walk of life, when they're told early in their lives or early in their careers or early in their development by somebody who's reputable, you're not good enough or you can't do this or maybe you should think about something else, a lot of times people will hear that and believe it. How did you maintain a belief that you could play at this level?
For me, I was just always competing. I love to compete. I love to play the game. And it's something that I've developed. And I just knew that it's what I wanted to do, and I was going to put as much time in and effort in to do it. So Coach Barnes had faith in me and trusted me, and he saw something in me, so he gave me the opportunity, and tried to make the most out of it.
That's exactly where I was going to go next. Grant Williams is my guest. I mean, it's one thing if somebody says, yeah, I'm not sure you can do this, but then when somebody else says you can do this, that can be empowering. Like that somebody also was Desmond Oliver, who had been at Charlotte. He was hired at Tennessee when Rick Barnes arrived. What did it mean to you to have him see something in you and believe in you?
So amazing to me, because they're my family. He's been there for me throughout my entire eighth grade. Coach Oliver has, and Coach Barnes has been there for me throughout my career here at Tennessee. And really thinking back on it, it's like these guys have changed my life, and they've given me a chance to be the man I am today.
Grant Williams joining us. We're talking Tennessee basketball. He is the SEC Player of the Year. You know, when you look at Tennessee basketball, you see Rick Barnes, and the outside perception was that when he arrived there, maybe his best years were behind him, and all he's done is turn that program around, have back-to-back seasons with 26 wins or more, and a conference title, and then bring Tennessee back. What has Barnes been like to play for?
He's incredible. He's a guy who's intense. He's a unique coach because he can always challenge you in different ways, whether that's just verbally or mentally and physically. He's a guy that you got to respect because he's done it for so long, for one, and two, he's always been honest and he knows the game. And it's been amazing for me to be able to learn the game from him.
Tennessee forward Grant Williams joining us. He is the SEC Player of the Year once again. He said, Rick Barnes, I mean, he feels like the biggest growth in your game from last year to this year is your mental approach, because of all the double teams that you see night in and night out, the different looks the teams throw at you. How much do you think you've changed in that regard, and how does that impact the way you play now?
I think I'm just more prepared. I've gone through it, and it's something that I've worked against. Back then, I was immature, and my mind wasn't as seasoned as it is now. So the experience and the veteran mindset that I bring every day, understanding that, for one, I have to get better, and also, for two, that not every team is going to play me the same way. So being able to approach the game and just be able to make adjustments or on the fly is what is needed and something that I've developed.
Yeah, I would imagine also in terms of that development, it's when you've got that bullseye on your back and everybody's coming for you every single night, that's probably an adjustment in and of itself. There's been this turnaround, right? So you're ranked number one during the regular season. You battle for a conference title. You're viewed as a serious Final Four contender. What's it like to play with those kind of expectations and know that you will get everybody's best shot every night?
Honestly, it's just something that you have learned to, because you can't really understand it or describe it until you're doing it. And honestly, we prepared ourselves. We put ourselves in a great situation, and we're going to continue to compete, and we're going to continue to love the game that we've put so much time into, and we understand our heart. So all the other stuff will take care of itself.
And now it's your time. It's the team's time. It's a great time for the program, and you've got that time between now and your first game in the SEC tourney. How do you go about preparing for that and then for the NCAA tournament after it?
Well, at this time, you can't really be too hard on your body. You can't run the tournament because you have to be able to play a long rest of the month. And it's going to be back-to-back-to-back games sometimes and back-to-back in the tournament. So you just got to prepare mentally. It's more mental than the physical. And also, you have to do a better job of taking care of your body, taking care of your diet and treatment, and understanding that the time that you spend on the court, you have to be efficient. You can't be having to correct little things. You have to focus on what you need to prepare for the game.
Not to be trite, Grant, but do you also put your phone down this time of year?
What'd you say?
Do you also put your phone down this time of year? You know.
Yes. You don't focus on the outside attention, because the more you do, the more overwhelmed you can get.
No matter how big or small your team is, Ferguson has a winning game plan for pro contractors. With thousands of plumbing repair parts, knowledgeable associates, and the largest national footprint in the game, when the pressure is on, count on Ferguson. In the meantime, let's go to the phones. We go to Texas. Shane in Texas. Good to have you, Shane. How are you?
What's going on, Mr. Rome?
What's
up? I just
want
to say I'm a huge fan. How you doing?
Good.
Howdy from Texas, by the way.
What's up?
So I'm from Beaumont, Texas, and I'm in Austin, Texas. I'm performing for South by Southwest. I'm actually a professional magician, and I would love to come by the show one day and show you something cool.
I'll tell you what. I'll think about that. What else did you want to talk about?
Well, actually, I got a question to ask you. I see that, you know, you're always reading emails, and you're crumpling up the papers and throwing it under your desk. I really hope you're recycling.
You know what? All right. Two key things right there. It's a short segment. Shane, let me respond. I appreciate you calling in. You're in Beaumont. You're in Austin, South by Southwest, wherever you are. All right, first things first. I'm glad you brought that up. He said, I see you read emails, and I see you crumple them, and I see you throw them under your desk. I hope you're recycling. Hello, I live in California. Of course I'm recycling. Of course. Just because an email is horrible and deserves to be set on fire does not mean I actually set it on fire. The good thing about most of those emails is that they can be recycled. I recycle everything, of course. Come on, man. Come on. In terms of you being, did you say you're a magician and you want to come by the studio and perform some tricks? Would that be all right? In a word, no. Hell no. Bro, I'm running a radio show here. Not a kid's birthday party. If there's a worse idea than a magician in this studio, I don't know what it is. My man, Shane, I know you came in here respectfully, and with all due respect to your craft, I can't think of a worse idea than running a magician through here. No, we're not doing that. And I'll tell you why. One, I don't want to. And two, if I greenlight you to come in here and do what you do, and to saw Hawk in half or make him disappear, then every dude who assembles balloon animals is going to want to come up in here too. And then Alvy's going to get his face paint during the breaks, card tricks, balloon animals, No, bro. We're not doing that. We're not doing that. Then the weirdo who comes in and does caricatures for $100, that guy will want up in here. Mimes will be knocking down my door. Tie-dye t-shirts. Animals. You know, all things like we used to do when my kids were kids at their birthday parties. No, bro, you can't come in here. Man, just stay at South by Southwest and do your tricks. No, I'm not going to pick a card. Any card. Come on, man. And can you imagine if I didn't recycle your emails? Can you imagine the landfill we'd have here? Man, I'd have a stack of emails to Mars. Bad emails to Mars. Of course I recycle everything. Just like you recycle your terrible takes. I recycle your terrible emails, and you clones recycle your terrible takes and terrible tweets. No, no, Magic Shane, you cannot come in here and do magic for me, bro. Come on, Shane. With all due respect to your craft, all right? I'm not going to tell you how to do your job. I don't want you to tell me how to do my job. I know it was just an offer by you. I don't know why I'm getting so pissed about this. I got an offer of magic for you, Shane. Watch me make you and your request disappear. Poof! You're gone, Shane. Just like magic. Hey, Shane, how about a game of 52 pickup? Bro, if you know anything about me and the show, you know how I feel about mimes. I would let a mime come in here and fight his way out of an imaginary box before I let you come in here. Let me tell you something. I mean, why don't we just turn this whole thing into the Del Mar Fair while we're at it? How about I just sit in a dunk tape tank and you can throw tennis balls at me? Or Alvin can throw tennis balls over. A magician offering his services in studio. That was different. How about I ride around in circles in the studio on a unicycle? And Rick in the 403 tweets, I bet Shane is an expert at making women disappear. Shane, I'm going to recycle this, all right? Don't you sweat that. I live in Cali. Not recycling is like murder in the first degree. We all recycle. We live in Cali. Next segment, I'm going to march an elephant in here and then walk on a tightrope. It's going to be awesome. Check out my trampoline act, too. It's getting away from me now. Now, you know what I'm going to do next segment? I'm going to talk about Conor McGregor and how he should have just kept walking. That's coming up next. Phone lines are open. Coming up next hour, Grant Williams from Tennessee. Troy Lovello is the manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks. It's all good, Shane. Appreciate the offer, bro. The answer is no. I got to admit, Shane, you deserve better, Shane. You're just being cool. You have pride in your craft. You offered me free services when normally it would cost. I get it. I mean, the first question was legit. Yes, we recycle. But dude, I'm like a 50-something-year-old guy. Why would I want to see a magic trick? Is there anything more awkward than being an adult and having other adults force their magic on you? That's always awkward. Awkward. Like, you'll be sitting there in a restaurant or a club, and this guy will walk up like, oh, no, dude, don't establish eye contact with a magician. Tori Lovello joins us for a few moments. Tori, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing good, Romy. Always, always a pleasure to join you guys.
Tori, great to have you. So we're 16 days. I can't believe it's 16 days away from the season opener. How has camp gone for you? How does the team look to you at this point?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it moves quick. It just seems like we were celebrating the new year, and all of a sudden the season's going to start. It jumps up on you. But we prepped for it. We feel like we're having a tremendous camp, and the guys have really gravitated to the concepts and the ideas that I've believed in from day one here. And, you know, we're in my third year, they understand what my demands are. And it's pretty seamless every time we have conversations as we're moving through drills, as we're moving through some of the expectations. We highlight a couple things that we want to get better on, better with, and this is just such a special group. They take it, they apply it, they trust it, and they go out and execute it.
Tori Lovello joining us. Tori, you mentioned expectations. One of the things that you've made really clear is your expectations for the team have not changed, even if the personnel has changed. If anything, correct me if I'm wrong, Tori, but it seems like you're enjoying the fact that people may be overlooking you and the team. So what's the mindset in camp?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what, we have lost a lot of guys. We know that. It's been well documented, and that's just the nature of the beast, and that's where we're at right here in Arizona, and we love that. We love the challenge of guys moving on and getting those deals and I'm really proud of him. I'm proud of the guys that have moved on and done special things outside of this organization once they've been here. But you're right. My guidelines, my expectations, they haven't changed. They haven't changed since day one, and that's not going to stop until the season's over and we've done something really, really special. So at times it's a little bit challenging, but we love those challenges here. It just makes us work a little bit harder, and I make sure that the staff every single day knows what they got to do and going out there and teaching. They take the reins from there, and it's a pretty good atmosphere here right now. I know that these guys are eager. They want the season to start. We feel like we have a lot of personnel changes, but we've plugged in guys to the right place and the right situation to be as successful as they possibly can for the season.
Tori Lavella joining us. You don't have Paul Goldschmidt. We know this. He was traded to St. Louis. And obviously, that's a guy you think really highly of, but you're focused on the guys that you have, not the guys that you don't have. And the team did add Adam Jones. I'm curious, Tori, how valuable is it to add a guy with 5 All-Star appearances and 4 Gold Gloves, and not necessarily for what he can do between the lines, but also just in terms of his professionalism and experience and what he brings to your clubhouse?
Yeah, you're exactly right. Look, we lost Paul Goldschmidt, Patrick Corbin, and A.J. Pollock. Those are 3 really, really good players that helped get us to where we are today. And now it's up to that next group of guys to take over. We've got 25 personalities, 25 players that are in there when the season starts that are just waiting to take it to that next level. So we feel like that foundation has been laid. We're going to continue to build on it. When you can add in guys like Adam Jones, it becomes a very, very special person who has walked the walk. He has yet to win a world championship, and I know that he's burning to get that done. So we feel like we're getting the perfect guy to fit into this clubhouse. Sometimes young teams need those types of leaders, and we've brought some guys in. You look at Gerard Dyson. You look at Greg Holland. They are walking around with that special hardware on their finger that we all are trying to get to. So when they can help a team get to the next level, we have a very, very good team that's maturing rapidly. They're going to help us grow up the right way to get us to that next level and hopefully win a world championship.
Tori Lavella joining us for a few more moments. Tori, I would never say that back in the day, if you were a manager, that the gig was easy. I would never say that. But the expectation back in the day was kind of like you'd pretty much show up and write the same lineup in most every day maybe and then go from there. How much has that all changed, and how much are you changing things up on a regular basis, a daily basis?
Well, I'll tell you what, Romy, you got exactly right. I played for some great managers that just had incredible instincts, and the highlight of the day for them was from 7 till 10 o'clock, and it was just everything between the white lines. But there's so much that goes on during the course of the day. It's almost a year-round job. And that's what we do here in Arizona, because that's what we believe in. We believe in the hardworking aspect of it. We believe in identifying situations, players, workouts, work habits, eating right, sleeping right. We leave no stone unturned, and it's not rocket science, because every team is actually doing it now. And times have changed. It is a little bit more challenging, but I will say this. I have a team of people around me. I have a great coaching staff that is out there executing my game plan every single day. So when the team fails and I fail, we all fail. And that's the family atmosphere that we've created here in Arizona.
Hey, Tori, last thought, I got about 60 seconds. If it's a year-round job right now, let me ask you, in the offseason, I know you coach a little bit of basketball, but can you unplug like your fellow UCLA Bruin, Dave Roberts, and take a few trips around the world, or are you all in all offseason?
No, you know what? I love the basketball scene. You're right. You hit it perfectly. And I like to get away from it. I separate a little bit. I watch the playoffs, and then my wife and I and children, we may get away and take a big trip. 2 years ago, we went to South Africa, went on a big safari for about 10 days, just my wife and I. Last year, we went to Madrid, Spain to visit my daughter, who was studying abroad. So we try to get away. We don't go for very long because we're kind of homebodies, but it's nice to separate a little bit, get into a culture that you don't know much about, and learn everything you possibly can.
I love it. Third season with the Diamondbacks. He was the 2017 NL Manager of the Year. He was a World Series champion, and the Diamondbacks open up at LA on March 28th. Tori, it's so good to have you back. I really appreciate it. Hope we can do it again soon.
Likewise, Romy. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Take care, Tori.
Good night now!